Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to another exciting episode of Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie, along with the coolest of co-hosts in all of BTR, bleeping BTR blogland, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, Annie. Thank you very much for that intro. And good afternoon, everybody. Glad that you're here on this Friday, the 10th of August. Where is the time going?
You know, I forgot to mention that we have actually passed our second anniversary. Just a couple of days ago, it was exactly 2 years I started on BTR. We have come a long way.
Yeah.
And doing this only twice a week, we've surpassed well over 200, I think, 25 episodes so far. So
wow.
Happy birthday to us. A little belated, happy birthday.
Yeah, and most of that is on you. Obviously, everybody knows all the effort you've put into this show. And a great job. Thank you to absolutely everybody for making us right up there with all the other big shots. Pretty soon, Annie will be on one of the major networks, and we'll talk about, remember when she was just a little one of us?
Well, listen, let me get on with the PSA announcement, and I'm going to let Gary Sinise make the announcement for me. So here we go, Gary Sinise for the Independence Fund, Lieutenant Dan Weekend.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Please join me this September 15th when, along with the Lieutenant Dan Band, I will return to Beaufort, South Carolina for the third annual Lieutenant Dan Weekend for an evening of fun, music, and show of support for our nation's military and their families. We'd also like to invite you or your company to join us in showing thanks to our nation's most severely wounded veterans by honoring a hero of your choice with a freedom flag. These freedom flags will be flown at the concert and are a perfect way to honor a special veteran in your life. 100% of the tax-deductible donation for a freedom flag will be used by all the Volunteer Independence Fund to support those most severely wounded veterans of the War on Terror. Myself and the rest of the Lieutenant Dan Band look forward to seeing you all once again this September, and I thank you for your support.
Okay, that September 15th is the date of the Lieutenant Dan Weekend. I put up in the chat room the links to the organizations. It's www.ldw3, that's the number 3.com, or independencefund.org. It's a week-long event starting September 9th through the 15th. Gary Sinise's Lieutenant Dan Band will be on the concert on that 15th, the Saturday. The day before, on the 14th, we will be broadcasting live from the Cat Island Golf Course with the wounded veterans after they finish their round of golf like we did back in April. And on the evening of the 14th, they will also have a second concert because they had so many people asking and trying to get into it. And it's going to include Dale Betty and Outlaw, Lieutenant Mike Corrado and Machine Gun, and Nashville recording artist Ricky Lynn. And all these are centered around military members who are now having bands. So take a few minutes, go onto either website. If you can't be here for the concert or attend any events, go and donate at least $5, because 99 cents of every dollar you donate goes directly to the cause. No administrative cost, no offices, no advertising. 99 cents to the dollar goes to the vets. So please, make your dollar go as far as it can in this economy and help these wounded veterans. Thank you.
How awesome is that? I wish I could be there, I'll tell you. Man, oh, man. That's just, every time we play that PSA with Gary Sinise, it just gets me excited. I not only love him as a great patriot, American, but he's also just an amazing actor. I mean, some of the roles he plays, and actually, obviously, Lieutenant Dan Weekend, he did such a great job, like Lieutenant Dan. I mean, he's just a great American. So that's awesome.
And now I want to remind everyone that when we start these shows off, we always do a dedication to a fallen military hero. And Doc Jones should be in the house, but he's not yet. This is someone that was with the invasion of Grenada, Operation Urgent Fury under Ronald Reagan. And this is out to the Marine Corps. So, Mike, if you'd pull up the Marine Corps anthem, and we will get started. Okay.
All right.
Marine Corps League Detachment 1265 honors Marine Corps Captain Jeb Franklin Siegel. The Lincoln County native lost his life in Operation Urgent Fury, the U.S. invasion of Grenada on October 25th, 1985, while serving as a Cobra attack helicopter pilot. Since the Vietnam War. The citation reads, "The President of the United States of America takes pride in presenting the Navy Cross to Captain Jeb F. Siegel, United States Marine Corps Reserve, for extraordinary heroism while serving as a TOW Cobra attack helicopter pilot with Marine Medium Helicopter Squadron 261, 22nd Marine Amphibious Unit, conducting combat operations on the island of Grenada in support of Operation Urgent Fury on October 25, 1983. While conducting an armed reconnaissance mission in support of ground forces, Captain Siegel's aircraft was hit by multiple anti-craft artillery projectiles and forced down behind enemy lines. Having been knocked out by the blast, Captain Siegel regained consciousness after his fellow pilot had flown the aircraft to impact and found that his aircraft was on fire and burning out of control. As Captain Siegel exited the front cockpit of the Cobra, he saw that the other pilot had been critically wounded and remained helplessly trapped in the aircraft. With complete disregard to his own safety, Captain Siegel courageously returned to the aircraft, which was now engulfed in flames, and pulled him out. As unexpended ordnance began to cook off all around him, Captain Siegel carried the severely wounded pilot well clear of the danger, now exposed to heavy enemy small arms and machine gun fire and faced with certain death or capture. Captain Siegel ignored the danger and remained to attend the wounds of the severely injured pilot by wrapping a tourniquet around his severely wounded arm. Realizing that enemy soldiers were approaching,
Captain Teague fearlessly distracted them away from the helpless pilot and ultimately sacrificed his own life in an effort to buy time for the rescue helicopter to arrive. By his extraordinary courage, uncommon valor, and loyal devotion to duty in the face of danger, Captain Siegel ensured his brother-in-arms was rescued, thereby reflecting great gratitude upon himself and holding the highest tradition of the Marine Corps and the United States Naval Service. He gallantly gave life for his country. Captain Siegel was shot by pro-Cuban forces while trying to signal other Cobra for support. The pilots of the 2nd Cobra, Major John Guggeri and 1st Lieutenant Jeff Shriver, also lost their lives as the gunship shot down. Captain Siegel is buried at Trinity Lutheran Church in Vail. Captain Siegel gave up his life to signal for help and was executed by pro-Cuban military. We never thank many people for their service, but we can honor them with a dedication each show and to play for them and all military. Of course, to be especially thankful for a song called My Name is America by Todd Allen Harrington. It is now the official patriotic anthem of this station. My Name is America by Todd Allen.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. My name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll rise up from the flames. And I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others. Others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me.
right. If anyone knows someone in the Romney campaign, give them a shout and tell them to pick up this song and make it their opening theme. That'll put some life in the campaign. Talking about campaigns and voters, we want to welcome our guest. His name is David Almasi. He's the executive director for the National Center. You can find his link up on the nationalcenter.org, O-R-G. Want to welcome David aboard. Good afternoon, David.
It helps if I turn. David, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, have a nice day, David. Thanks for joining us. Hi, David. Welcome. Thank you for being
our guest,
David.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Why don't you, David? Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell our listeners a little bit about you and your cause, and we'll go from there.
I'm with the National Center for Public Policy Research. I've been here about 15 years now, and we are an organization that sees our role as being able to insert ourselves in the public policy process where the conservative movement is not particularly strong for one reason or another, and to try to make the conservative voice stronger there. And that is definitely the case this time around with voter ID and voter protection and identification protection for the American voter. We've had a campaign by the left against this common sense idea, and a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which had been doing a lot of work on the issue, has dropped out, and we, unbeknownst to ourselves at the beginning of the year, are now acting as one of the key groups out there trying to defend the right for people to vote without fear that their vote is being stolen by someone else.
Now, National Center has been around not just for a few years. You go back to the 80s, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We've been around since the early 80s. And as I mentioned, we're a place that looks at trying to make the conservative movement stronger. So at one point, we were doing foreign policy. We were doing we worked on the Grenada issue. We were talking about the fallen warrior who died in Grenada. We did things like that. We did ballistic missile defense. We've done health care. We do African-American conservatives, environmental issues. There's a wide gamut of things that we've been doing, and right now voter ID is one of the top things that we're doing.
All right. You also work with Project 21, correct?
That's right. That's the Black Conservative Group, and I'm the staff director. I'm not a member of Project 21, but I work with Black conservatives around the country who want to make sure that their voice is not squelched by a media that either is too lazy to find them or doesn't want to make their presence known and let people know that there is a diversity of opinion within the Black community.
Yeah. I was pulling up stuff on the voter ID. Now, I live in South Carolina.
You're a battleground.
Oh, absolutely. And we had passed the voter ID law, not very unsimilar to the one, I believe, in Arizona. And it was very closely worded, but we had changed it because we saw the challenges that were going on in Arizona. But despite the fact we made the changes that the DOJ objected to, you know, the items that Arizona had, they still knocked ours down. What is your center going to be doing about that?
Well, the case, I'm not sure exactly where your case is in litigation right now. There are two states right now that I know are currently awaiting decisions, and that's Texas and Pennsylvania. But we're trying to make sure that people understand what's going on out there and understand the reason why this is a common sense protection, and there seems to be, and this is just me personally, the only reason why you wouldn't want this sort of protection out there is because you want to see identity theft occur, that you have a vested interest in either maligning the election by saying it wasn't legitimate or to actually make it illegitimate because you have a political axe to grind and a nefarious idea. You have bad intent.
Now, voter ID is not something new. Back in, I believe it was 2002, Bush had pushed, the Help America Vote Act.
Right.
Which basically said that, you know, if you mailed your application in, when you appear at the voter booth the first time, then you need to show ID. So how is that different than requiring everyone to show ID? Because in one area you have just one group of people you're mandating that on. Now you're just making it non-discriminatory, making it across the board. So how is that different?
Well, it's just a common sense thing. I mean, we live in the 21st century. We need, like it or not, we need to have ID for just about everything. Just for your listeners, just as an exercise, go through a week and see every time you have to pull your ID out of your pocket for one reason or another, be it a very simple thing like driving or going to the bank or something more intricate like you're going to a government facility or something like that where you have to have proof of ID. And it gets to be so silly that it's things like getting a free breakfast or a free birthday burrito at Moe's Southwestern Grill. Last time I had my birthday roll around, they said, "We'll come on into our restaurant. We'll give you one. Just show us who you are. Prove your ID." But for some reason, there's people that think that you don't need to have to show an ID. You don't have to do this simple thing for something as important as voting. And that just opens the door to fraud and misuse.
Yeah, now, the Brennan Center for Justice, and don't cringe. I told you I was going to sidewind you, which is out of New York University Law School, did a paper. Now, I'm trying to see what the date on the paper is. It looks like it's just this past July.
It's very recent. Yeah, I'm aware of it.
And their supposition is that about 500,000 people in 10 states live within more than 10 miles away from a voter registration place. Using that supposition, they're saying they don't have cars or whatever. There's no public transportation, so they should be exempt from having identification. But I thought about that, and I says, well, how do these people, if they live 10 miles away from a voter location or, you know, some sort of a metropolitan center, how do they get their staples? If they're on a farm, they have to go somewhere to buy the feed and fertilizer and get the fuel for their tractors and everything else. So they have to drive something. And if they want food, clothing, they have to drive or have transportation. So why can't they have identification?
The whole idea behind what the Brennan Center is saying and what the NAACP said last December is that people are helpless. The people who were energized back in 2008 and were going out and telling their friends and neighbors and walking precincts and standing in line for hours because it was so important for them to have hope and change now can't go to the local DMV and get an ID. They can't look at other alternatives to standing in that long line, like maybe getting an absentee ballot, which actually doesn't, in most cases, require any form of ID. What they're trying to do is make anyone that doesn't have an ID out to be just the weakest, most vulnerable person in the world, and they're just throwing this on populations that should be offended. Young people, old people, minority populations, poor people. These are people who, for some reason, just lack any sort of ability to go out for themselves and get an ID. And what I think is even more outrageous is that these people, the Brennan Center has, since I believe 2001, gotten $7 million from George Soros to do their studies and their reports. I know it doesn't take a lot of money to put a report together, especially something as shoddy as their report. That they're not putting any money, as far as I can tell, into getting people IDs. The NAACP, I talked to their assistant general counsel on email the other day, and I said, what are you guys doing to help people that don't have IDs get IDs? And he said, well, we're filing lawsuits. I'm like, well, that's not getting someone an ID. They're probably going to be putting money into buses on election day so that people can go out and vote for the candidate of their choice. But they're doing nothing between now and election day, which is quite a long time, to get that same bus to take those people to the DMV if they want to get their ID.
Yeah, no, I will say that when I voted for the last presidential election, and you know I did not vote for Obama.
We don't have a dog in this fight. The National Center is a nonpartisan organization. Let me say that right out there. But please go ahead from there.
But because I'm disabled, I didn't want to go on election day and have to stand in an extremely long line because my back and stuff just wouldn't be able to handle it. So I said, all right, I'm going to do the early voting. I got up to early voting. I was standing in line. They were busing people in. They had vans. They had carpools. So I don't understand how they can't, as you were saying, muscle that same pool of talent to get these people their identifications. I find the hypocrisy amazing. And this is what gets me about the 2002 law. This is what was required to get your voter registration by mail. It said a copy of a utility bill, a bank statement, a government check, a paycheck, or any other government document shows the name and address of the voter. So in other words, you don't even have to have a photo ID just to get your voter registration mailed to you.
And that's the way it is in many states right now for their voter ID law. It's not a necessarily a photo ID. It could be a lot of different things. It's that these groups are going out there, the ones that are complaining, it seems, the most, are the ones that will go out and help someone register. They'll probably help them get information on which candidates are the best, and they'll definitely try to help them get to the polls on election day. But nowhere in this process, and there's a lot into that process, will they say, hey, you know, this state has a law that says you have to have an ID. Do you have an ID? And if they don't, figure out how they can get that ID. I live in Virginia, where we do have a new ID, voter ID law. We always have, in the last, as far long as I can remember, required an ID of some sort. But the state, in order to try to get around any complaints, they're going to go ahead and they're going to send out again IDs to everyone. They're not photo IDs, but they're just voter IDs that everyone can bring to the polling place on election day. And I would think after all the controversy, anyone that doesn't come to the polls in Virginia that day with some form of ID, especially the one that the state sent to them specifically to tell them what they needed, is irresponsible. And voting is very important, and they should realize that, and they should be bringing ID so that everyone is sure that their vote is not being stolen.
Now, I just was catching something on the news today, and I believe it was in Massachusetts, that they're now starting a new program that anyone that's on some form of welfare, they're mailing out to them voter registration.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a little odd?
That's a side topic, but that's very important, too. That's where a lot of that goes, I think, back to the Motor Voter Act during the Clinton administration, where they put the responsibility on the bureaucrats to try to get as many people on the voter rolls as possible, and a lot of this just happens to fall to the people in charge of the welfare benefits. And now, in this day and age, when the Obama administration has so many people on the public dole, there's certainly reason to think that these people are going that they might want to, in the state of Massachusetts, want as many people that are dependent on the government as possible to be voting for the candidate that says, I'm going to keep the government funding these things and not requiring anything back from you. Take from the rich, give to you, and you can just sit around and occasionally look for a job.
Yeah, now, because you recently wrote an article where you were quoting Horace Cooper,
mm-hmm.
and he was pointing out that they're actually using the vote to actually steal the vote. You want to explain that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you meant by that question, but Horace's paper is saying that we need to have voter ID to protect the votes of some of the weakest in our population, while the other side may say, oh, voter ID is voter suppression because these people can't possibly get IDs. We're saying, hey, voter ID protects these people's rights because there are a lot of people out there trying to swing elections, we believe, and it's easiest to prey on the most vulnerable. It's easiest to say, I know these people at this old age home are going to not going to vote, so we can collect their names, go to the polls that day, and have people vote in their place. Or we can, in the case of Kentucky, they found that people were willing to sell their votes. And it wasn't for president, it wasn't for senator or governor, it was for local things like the sheriff and for the DA, because drug dealers, criminals, wanted to swing the elections so that they didn't get leaned on as much by the law. So they were taking people's votes for $25-$50 to vote for the people who would look the other way, the people who weren't hard on crime. There's a new book coming out next week by John Fund and Hans von Spakovsky, hard name to pronounce, that's going to allege that Al Franken, the U.S. senator from Minnesota, is illegitimately in his seat because of potential voter fraud. There were over 1,000, 1,100, I believe, felons who, like it or not, like that idea or not, weren't allowed to vote in the last election, yet they voted, and as a result, Al Franken won by less than 350 votes. So more than likely, he is illegitimate, and that was done through fraudulent votes, votes that were stolen from legal voters because people that shouldn't have been voting voted in that election.
Wow. Now, it's funny because when my husband and I first moved here back in 2001, we went and proudly got our new driver's license and everything else. And as we were at the counter, we were watching it, and someone we knew that was not a U.S. citizen, no, a legal resident, but not a U.S. citizen, when the person went up to the counter to get their driver's license, they just were automatically handed a voter registration, and the person says, well, I'm not a U.S. citizen. Now, this is a DMV, a state employee says, oh, just fill it out anyway.
Go right ahead. That's the problem with the motor voter law, and that's the problem that we have with our system. And while I'm not sure a voter ID law would necessarily stop that, we do need to look at our entire voter process because it's much too lax. It's much too easy to have corruption and fraud, and we've got dead voters on the list. We have foreign voters on the list. We have people who are moved and in two different voter lists that can potentially vote on both. A person lost their job in the D.C. city government because it was found that after she moved to Maryland, she was voting in the D.C. elections. And she thought that was perfectly okay at the time, yet she was like one of the highest people in the D.C. government at the time she did it. It's amazing that we can allow these sorts of things to happen when there are so many elections that are so close, and just the whole idea of a vote in the first place is so sacred that we're not doing what we need to do to safeguard it.
Yeah, and that reminds me of all the heck that Charlie Crist is going through in Florida. He was knocking people off the rolls because they were either deceased or they were immigrants. And he was able to hold on to that policy, though. He just did it by the skin of his teeth, but he held on to it, right?
I'm not sure about anything that Charlie Crist did, but I know Rick Scott is doing some of that now. And he is he was going toe-to-toe with Janet Napolitano at the Department of Homeland Security because when he was alleging that there were illegal aliens in the voter lists, the government, the rest of the federal government was coming down on him saying, oh, you can't say that and you can't do that because just so you and your listeners know, if you don't already, a lot of southern states, and there are some other states thrown in for good measure, when the Voting Rights Act was passed in the 60s, they were punished because of past injustices and being against equal rights, that they still to this day have to get federal approval from the Justice Department to change anything that has to do with voting. And so Florida was saying, look, we want to purge our voter lists of dead people. We want to purge it of illegal aliens. We want to purge it of other people that aren't legitimately able to vote in our state. And the Department of Justice was saying, hey, no, you can't do that. You need preclearance. We're not going to allow that. And Florida came back and said, look, what we want to do is get the bad people off the list. The Department of Homeland Security has the lists. All we need to do is merge those lists together, take out the ones that have red flags. And it took a lot of strong-arming and a lot of shaming of the federal government, I think, in order for the state of Florida to get that list. And just to clean it up, to take the people who don't deserve to be on the list by any way, shape, or form, took basically moving a mountain to do. And that's where I go back to the idea that I think that the only reason why you'd want to stop list cleaning and stop photo ID and other forms of voter identification is if you want chaos, if you want votes to be allowed to be stolen, or you want something after the election's over to say, hey, no, red flag, we didn't, this wasn't right. Look, this person didn't get the vote here in this state, that kind of thing. I mean, they want an excuse to complain.
Yeah, I have to apologize to Rick Scott. I mixed him up with the rhino that was in the office before him.
Okay.
My apologies.
No problem.
or as we call Florida, Southern New York. there's actually a large number of states that have strict voter ID, and Pennsylvania right now is being challenged in court. What's the court challenge with Pennsylvania right now? What is their beef with them?
The Pennsylvania case is interesting, and it's not the federal government, it's the ACLU, because Pennsylvania is not one of the states covered by the Voting Rights Act. It does not have to get preclearance. So they came along and said, look, we want to have a voter ID law where people have to bring certain forms of ID to the poll. Could be a driver's license, could be a government ID, could be things like that. And then after the poll process became a controversy, they said, hey, we'll even create a new thing, a free voter ID that as long as someone goes to the right office and picks it up, we'll give it to them for free. It'll be good for 10 years. They can take it to the polls, and it'll be completely accepted. The ACLU is saying they brought 10 plaintiffs to the case, saying these people are going to be disfranchised because of the voter ID law. Well, a couple people actually have IDs. There's no reason why they should have been on the list. There was one person who was a transgendered whatever and was afraid that because he was a man when he dresses up in the morning and it's a female on his ID or vice versa, that he's not going to be able to vote or it's not going to be able to vote. And then on top of this, there was a study that was done by some of the state departments that found out that it was like 750,000 people in Pennsylvania don't have a driver's license yet have a voter registration. Oh my God, that means that 750,000 people aren't going to get the vote. No, that's not the case at all. I just mentioned all these other things that will allow them to vote, and it's very wide. Like I said, school ID, driver's license, voter ID, elderly can get pretty much anything printed out by an assisted living center that they work with. Easy things, but people are trying to say, oh, driver's license is the holy grail, but that's not. I mean, there's many things. So they're just trying to bring up anecdotal things, extreme cases, hypotheticals. They really haven't presented us with real cases of people who actually cannot vote or could not vote in the past because of a voter ID law. It's infinitesimal the amount of people who may be affected by this, and it's more important for all the people who could be disfranchised by ghost voters and fraudsters and other things that will come up, I'm sure, this election season.
Yeah, I had a laugh, though, because Nikki Haley here offered people to pick up these individuals that didn't have an ID, and they said, for free, for one whole day, the state will go pick you up at home, take you over to DMV, stay with you, help you with your paperwork, whatever you have to do, and take you back home. And they were claiming something like 100,000 people in the state were going to be disenfranchised voters. You know the number of people that actually took her up on the ride, the free ride?
Please, let me know.
47.
Yep.
47.
And how much did the NAACP do to promote this? How much did the Brennan Center do to promote this? I mean, that's the problem, is they're trying to make it sound like millions of people will be losing their votes, yet when someone comes up and says, look, we'll help make it possible for you to vote, we'll get you that ID for free, barely anyone comes forward.
Yeah, and I was trying, unfortunately I could not get this clip to download, but Eric Holder back in May was up in front of the Conference of National Black Churches and the Congressional Black Caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching that videotape, and I started turning livid. I was unaware that he has launched more than 100 investigations into racially discriminatory voting practices. But he ignored completely all the voting practices of the Black Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
Up in Philadelphia, down in Texas, the intimidation going on in there. And he's picking and choosing the fight instead of being blind justice and giving everyone equal protection under the law.
They're going after hypotheticals. They're going after the idea that if you pass this law, people won't be allowed to vote. But they're not looking. They're making settlements in the case of the Black Panthers in Philadelphia, where they're standing outside a polling place, yelling intimidating things, holding weapons, telling people that they wanted their candidate and their candidate only to get support that day. There's a group that came out of Houston called True the Vote, which came together. It was a bunch of Tea Party people who decided to do their civic duty and be election judges on election day, and just saw rampant abuses within the polling places where people were being encouraged to vote, coached to vote certain ways, allowed to vote without proper identification, things like that. When you ask the usual opponent of voter ID, what is stopping anybody from saying, I'm Joe Schmo, here's my address, give me a ballot, what's stopping them from doing this? And they say, well, that's against the law. But what are you going to do, put a cop in every polling place? You could never do that. Logistically, and the ACLU would be out there screaming and yelling. They did that in 2000 when they said that voters were being intimidated in Florida. You can't – what they want you to do, they wouldn't allow you to do, and it would be logistically impossible. So they know – They know it's a wink and a nod that they want chaos, and it's crazy, it's wrong, and that's why voter ID is the simplest way to ensure that ballots are not stolen.
Now, it's funny you mentioned about putting a cop in every single polling place. I don't know if you're aware that I'm retired NYPD, and a voting day, you know, when it was polling time, they would actually have one of us in each one of the polling places. But all you are allowed to do is keep the peace. You weren't there to check IDs. You were just there to make sure everything went in an orderly fashion and to make sure the machines were not tampered with. You inspected the seal when they opened up. You inspected the seal when they left. And then you brought all the tallies back to the precincts, our precincts, the police precincts, where they were then fed into the computer and then sent to the election board. That was our function.
But if you had any inkling that you saw that person, the person with the red shirt, you saw him in here earlier with a blue shirt and was voting, could you have done anything?
That's an interesting question, since I was never posed with that. But I'm sure if someone said something, I would have to ask whoever was manning the log and saying, wait a minute, did this person present ID before? And then escort them out. I'm sure, knowing the time that I was there, the administration that was in office, they would have said, oh, hands off, just escort them out of the building and send them on their way.
Yeah, because that's the thing that they say, oh, that's never going to happen. You can't do these kinds of things. Technology is makes it easier to do things these days. I mean, we saw in 2008 that they hacked, that someone just with a little common sense in the internet was able to figure out what Sarah Palin's email address was and hacked her email. With this guy from the NAACP last week, I sent him his home address and his polling place that I found on Google in 5 minutes, and said, what's stopping anyone from going into your Maryland polling place and saying, I'm you and I'd like a ballot, please? And he couldn't reply other than saying, well, that's illegal. So?
It's funny because I think even South Carolina, you just simply go online, key in your name, and it'll come up with your address and your polling place.
Yeah. It's easy to do. And the Obama campaign just made an app that, as far as Democrat voters are concerned, shows where they all live, what their names are. And if you want to go vote for – take their votes, I mean, go to the polling place, look at your app and say, well, I'm Joe Smith. And I live at 123 Any Street, USA, and you can walk in without photo ID. I mean, the Veritas Project did that at the New Hampshire primary. They went and they got obituaries and found out who died over the past couple of weeks, went into the polling places of these people and said, hi, I'd like this dead guy's ballot. And the poll workers were readily going to hand their ballot to them. And they always said no, so they wouldn't officially be breaking the law. The one time they got caught was because the poll worker knew the recently deceased person. You're not going to – I mean, I know in my polling place, my wife has worked in polling places. She knows hardly anyone that comes in to the polling places. All she sees is a name and an address, and in Virginia they do ask for an ID. But, I mean, it's not like a rural place where there's only 25 voters or something like that. I mean, we have hundreds of voters, and there were lines all day long. There's no stopping someone in my mind in some of these busy polling places from going in, voting their own ballot, going home, changing clothes, getting in line, coming back a couple hours later, and voting, say, their dead neighbor or their other neighbor who's in a rest home now, or going to another locality altogether and voting themselves at their old house. There's just nothing stopping that except for voter ID, being able to pull out your driver's license or some other valid ID saying, here's my name, here's my address, here's my photo. You know who I am.
Yeah, no, it's funny because James O'Keefe has up a video on YouTube and his website where he actually went into a D.C. polling place, said he was Eric Holder,
mm-hmm.
and they were handing him the ballot for him to vote. And he said, well, I want to show you my ID. And they weren't going to take it.
Don't need that. I mean, if anything should make Eric Holder spring to action is the fact that I don't know if he voted that day or not, but someone almost, I mean, can you imagine if he walked in later that day and said, I'd like to vote now. And they said, sorry, Mr. Holder, you've already voted. What's he going to do? I mean, he is the Attorney General. He will have the entire federal government jump down and find his ballot. But what's going to happen if it's you or me? I mean, they're not going to do anything that day. They're not going to do anything that week, probably. It's going to be very hard to find. And how are you going to do it? You're going to put a camera in the polling place? You can't do that without the civil liberties people going crazy. And you can't have the police crawling all over the place without the civil liberties people going crazy. I mean, it's going to be very hard. It is hard to try and prosecute voter fraud. You got to pretty much catch someone in the act. And like I said, a busy polling place, it's not going to be that easy.
No. Now, we have a caller on the line that's been waiting a while. Let me bring him in so he can ask his question or make his comment. Hang just a second. Here we go. And, Thomas, you are on the air live with Sudden Sense.
Hi, Annie. How are you?
All right. You have a comment or question for David?
I have a comment in life.
Oh, Thomas dropped off.
Oh, okay.
All right, unfortunately.
I'll ask a question real quick while Thomas calls back. Skype is so fudgy sometimes. I have a question in place of Thomas's question until he calls back, I should say, is that what got you involved in this? I mean, this is really cool, but I mean, where were you when, you know, it's just kind of the idea, I'm going to do this.
Well, kind of like I said at the beginning, we didn't intend to do this. We didn't sit around in January and set up a strategic plan for the year and say, let's start working on voter ID. What happened was the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, is a group that helps state legislators with public policy, and they have voter ID legislation. The group Color of Change, the group founded in part by the 9/11 truther guy, Van Jones, that used to work for Obama, his group started up a campaign of intimidation against ALEC funders. There's a lot of businesses that give money to ALEC to work on issues largely regarding taxes, like restaurant taxes and food taxes and things like that. They went to these companies and said, we're going to put commercials in the black media saying that you don't want black people to be allowed to vote. Also, they were supportive of the legislation, the Stand Your Ground legislation that with the Trayvon Martin, all that. They were going to lump that in, saying this company is supporting the bill that killed Trayvon Martin and is supporting legislation that will take away people's right to vote unless you take your funding away from ALEC. So ALEC lost the support of companies like Johnson & Johnson and Coca-Cola. Microsoft, I believe, was one of them. But a lot of companies across the board dropped their support for ALEC. ALEC then, as a reaction to this, dropped their program of promoting voter ID and Stand Your Ground laws. That made a big hole in the movement of pushing voter ID. So we decided, well, our mission is to make the conservative movement stronger where it's weaker. We came in. We're not promoting legislation. We're not lobbying for legislation because that's against the tax laws that govern our organization. But we are putting out papers. We are providing examples of why this is needed and just kind of being an advocate for the idea of common sense voter protections.
That is important.
That's really cool. I mean,
thank you.
That is. It is one thing It is one thing to be an armchair quarterback and see an injustice and say, you know, we should do something about it. Another thing to actually organize a organization that does something about it. And that really is something.
Thank you.
No, you're welcome.
All right, we got Thomas back in. Let me see if I can bring him back on. Thomas, you're back on air with Block Talk Radio.
Hey, can you hear me now? Hopefully.
Welcome, Thomas. Don't be hanging up on us now.
Oh, actually, that wasn't you guys and that wasn't me. It suddenly came in like the show ended. That's what happened. Mr. Alamessi, and please forgive me if I say your name wrong. You're hitting the nail on the head in all your points. And first of all, I want to say thank you for your organization working with Project 21, because, you know, to me it shows that you and your organization, you're not willing to bring other black conservatives into the fold as in the mainstream movement as a whole. Because me personally, I honestly believe that we shouldn't have to look like liberals in that we're broken down by groups and race and all that stuff. Now, having said that, you know, I'm tired of conservatives as a whole having to bite their tongues if they happen to be white conservatives because they might offend black liberals. You know, the whole Trayvon Martin thing that you guys were just speaking about, you know, everybody came out, they were up in arms, but yet and still the young lady who was killed by Planned Parenthood about 4 weeks ago now, not one single black liberal organization, NAACP, or anybody like that came out in defense of her, you know. And I just encourage you guys, and especially your organization, keep hammering at them, because at the end of the day, the only way we're going to let them know that we're for real is if we're brutally honest with our message. And I am personally, as a black conservative, I am sick and tired of having to kowtow to the liberals in my community, you know, because the thing of it is, I don't care. I can walk away from them. And it wouldn't be no solace off my back. But we as conservatives, we're one team. And just continue to do what you're doing. And I'm honored to, you know, hear what you're saying. Thank you for taking my call. So.
Well, that was a mouthful, David.
He says exactly what's up with Project 21, is that we want to make sure that there is a diversity of opinion within the black community that needs to be known. And a lot of times when people come to us and want to become a member of Project 21, they say, like, look, I've taken lumps from my family. I've taken lumps from my coworkers and just people on the street for being a black conservative, for being something that is an oddity to so many people. And that's what we try to be a place where they can come and say, okay, I can speak freely here. I can show the diversity of opinion. I can say what needs to be said, because you're not going to hear that from Al Sharpton on MSNBC. You're not going to hear that from the Congressional Black Caucus, except for maybe Alan West and Tim Johnson. You're not going to hear that from people like Harry Belafonte and Will Smith and Chris Rock and that new guy that Chris Rock is promoting on FX last night as the brand new Black Jon Stewart or whatever. But you will see that through Project 21. You will see that through people like Horace Cooper and DeRoy Murdoch and Sherilyn Harley Laban, that we're helping to try and get their voice amplified and out there.
Now, you took a hit a couple of years ago. Max Blumenthal wrote a nasty, nasty item about you, curiously pale, because you were being interviewed about Project 21. And I'm trying to see who was the one that was questioning you.
I think
it
that was
on
C-SPAN.
Yes,
what happened?
Paul.
That's a funny story. The chairman of Project 21 was supposed to be on the Washington Journal program of C-SPAN, and his car broke down. And so I had to go on at the last minute in his place. And I am the staff director for Project 21, but I am not black. I do not try to portray myself as a member of Project 21 or black or anything like that. But because it was minutes to airtime and they needed a guest, I jumped in, and oh my God, it was... I think he alluded to it as being like the end of The Wizard of Oz and Toto pulling away the curtains and, oh, my God, here I am. But what he didn't talk about was the second half of the show is basically me sitting there while the chairman of Project 21 called in by phone and did a phone interview on the program and kind of monopolized my time. I didn't get a chance to talk too much. And that's fine with me because I was just there to I'm just here at Project 21 to help edit, book interviews, things like that, for the membership, and they speak on their own. So, I mean, it's much ado about nothing, and I'm sorry if Max Blumenthal also has forgotten that the NAACP used to have white presidents and that David Bossetis over at the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, who they quote all the time, is also white, and black lawmakers have white staffers, and I'm sure there's white people working at the NAACP. Sorry, Max. Sorry for that.
You know what I found that was so hypocritical about it is that if you don't help, they're going to turn around and call you a racist because you don't care about the plight of the people. And this is coming from the liberal side. But if you do help, then they also then criticize you for trying to ingratiate yourself with the black population. So you're
no
damned if you do or damned if you don't.
Exactly. There's absolutely no way to win, and no good deed goes unpunished. And I don't think I'm getting any – there's no money in my pocket from the Koch brothers, but they're the evil of this whole election process. Yet we're not talking about the fact that the Brennan Center, which put out that survey that we think is so limited in its scope was published in part with $7 million of George Soros' money. And if we want to talk about who's more evil in the business community, is it George Soros or is it the Koch brothers? I think that George Soros will win every time.
Well, we did have a caller coming in from area code 702. So if you want, call back area 702. I was just hitting your microphone when your call dropped off. Let everyone else know out there, our call-in line is open. It's 917-889-3675. You know, David, you have another article. I'm just going to take you a little bit off the track, just a little bit. You wrote, you didn't write. This was inside the Daily Caller. We already talked about that. I'm looking at the one about this Gabby Douglas. And yes, it is your article. It is your article. You wrote back April 7th. Now, talk about another level of hypocrisy on this. Here's this girl who did such a stunning, such a beautiful, beautiful performance. Then all of a sudden, no one else cares about her performance. They're talking about her hair.
Mm-hmm.
What about...
Yeah, that was a Project 21 release. A bunch of the Project 21 members spoke out about that.
And here she's got a history where her family's struggling to help her get to the Olympics and so on and so forth. You know, and the girl is training. She's not thinking about, you know, how her hair looks. She's thinking about how her performance is and what she can do to score a perfect 10. She does that, and all the media picks up is that, oh, I think someone called her with the N-word, the nappy word.
The nappy word, yes. The word that got Don Imus fired that time. Yeah, I mean, it's... I can't imagine thinking why any athlete should have perfect hair. Because you're out there, you're sweating, you're exerting yourself. In her case, she's flipping upside down and all over the place. That's silly. And for people to go on that little thing when there's so much other accomplishment is just silly. And that's what the Project 21 members were talking about.
All right, let me bring this caller back on now. And area code 702, you're on the air with Seth and Sense. To whom am I speaking?
Aloha, this is Jesse calling from Las Vegas.
Hi, Jesse, how are you doing? Just to let David know, Jesse has another organization called, Unite the Vote?
Yes, that's us. We're almost ready for business. We're just kind of coming together on that. But I was, I'm really, really delighted to hear about David's organization and the mission. But the thing that we're running into, okay, this idea of making the conservative movement stronger where it is weak, but things like voter ID, things like enforcing, you know, immigration laws, things like the Constitution, when did that become part of a conservative movement? I mean, isn't that for all Americans? Somehow it's been, you know, things that are American have been redefined as things that are conservative, and then there's the other side. But I know a lot of Blue Dog Democrats that are not going to be voting for Obama, but they hate the fact that they're, you know, the divisiveness and how everything's been redefined is very uncomfortable. David, what do you find in your experience with that?
Well, I went to go see a speech last week with Arthur Davis, the former congressman, Democrat congressman, and former Democrat gubernatorial candidate for Alabama, who has since switched parties. And one of the things he's passionate about is voter ID. And I don't think he considers himself a Tea Party member. I don't think he considers himself a Reagan conservative or anything like that. But he did, I guess he believes, and I don't know this for sure, I mean, what his feelings are, but he just feels betrayed by the people that were in the party he was once in. And the group I mentioned earlier, that True the Vote group in Houston, that's now helping try to train election judges and those types of people around the country, they went into doing this just out of their own civic-mindedness. They didn't do it because they wanted to help a candidate. They did it because they wanted to be good citizens, and then found when they got there that there was rampant abuse within the polling place. And when they reached out to try to work on this issue, they didn't do it as in, let's screw the other side. They said, hey, let's all get together and make sure that this abuse doesn't happen in the future. And they found that the left or the liberals didn't want to have anything to do with it. And it's a shame that this does seem to be a partisan issue. Whenever you hear about voter ID laws and the controversy over them, they always want to say, oh, this is something that's happening in battleground states with Republican legislatures. Well, Kansas is not a battleground state. It's a state that's so conservative that some liberal wrote a book about trying to analyze why it's as crazy as it is. And Kansas has a voter ID law, not because they need to solidify their conservative vote anymore, but because it's the right thing to do, that it's a good thing to make sure that everyone who wants to vote can vote and knows that their ballot is not going to be taken by someone who's either taken someone else's identity or shouldn't be voting in the first place. And that's, like I said, it should be in every – Rhode Island has passed voter ID. Rhode Island is one of the most liberal states in America, yet they have a pretty good voter ID law. Why? Because they're afraid that people are going to steal votes. That's, I mean, that it shouldn't be a blue thing or a red thing or a purple thing. It should be just a common sense thing.
Well, I agree with you on the common sense thing. The last question I have for you, okay, what about us Americans like myself and probably a lot of people listening to Defending the Republic right now, what is it that you would recommend for us to do to with voter ID, yes, but in the whole scheme of things, how do we refocus voters on the issues, the common sense issues, and get rid of this divisiveness that it just ripping, I mean, it's useful. I mean, I understand the whole conquer and divide or divide and conquer mentality, but it's wearing people out. And what can we do to say, hey, look, this is just a common sense issue. It has nothing to do with liberal or conservative.
I think if we knew the answer to that question, we would we wouldn't be having any of these discussions. I mean, there's a polarization in America, and you're either for or against Obama, or you're for or against Mitt Romney, or you're for or against whatever third-party candidates there are out there. And it's I think just people need to I'm not even going to try and figure out the psychology of that, because it's just people are just so polarized these days, and I think like you, it'd be great if we could find more common ground and not have a knee-jerk reaction every time if somebody to the left says something, well, then we can't support that because we're from the right, and vice versa. And I would personally say it happens more on the other side. I see that with my liberal friends, and I certainly see it here on Capitol Hill.
No, it's funny, because I have a story I like to tell, that I have a friend at one of my watering holes. He is a liberal. And a couple of times I'll be sitting next to him as we enjoy our evening libations, and he'll look at something on the TV, and it's usually Fox News, and he's going, I can't believe what these people are doing. And when he starts to talk, he's starting to talk like a conservative. And I look at him and I say, Ken, you're saying exactly what I would say. Don't you realize we're more alike than different? And sometimes he has to sit back and goes, you know what? Yeah. And that's the difference. With today's day and age, we have political leaders that get elected by causing division. It's the only way they can get elected. But if we stop that and we start talking to each other like we're doing today, we may find we have a lot more on common ground. I mean, one of the reports out today is about now there's 100 million Americans now on some sort of government welfare. Out of that, 36% are immigrant households, 36%, while only 23% are native-born American households. This is what we should be talking about. Why are we having immigrants coming in just to get welfare? Why can't we take care of the people we have here first? If you're a legal immigrant and you need a hand up, fine. But now we have illegal immigrants getting food stamps, Medicaid, free schooling, you know, you name it. Why? Why aren't we enforcing our immigrant laws so that we have our American people being employed? These are questions we should be asking, but instead government's dividing us and saying, oh, I've got an election coming up, so this is a great issue, just so I can push everyone away and get better votes.
Mm-hmm. I talked to someone earlier this week about education reform on that, too. I mean, someone that just wants to make sure students are put first in all education policy, and she's having a tremendous problem dealing with it, because there are so many people that want to politicize the process or make it that it's more about the labor issues involving the teachers than it is about the education issues involving the students.
And that's a real problem. We have that here in South Carolina, because we have, you know, school districts that all they care about is getting their pals in some sort of an administrative position, so money is being sucked administratively. We have school district here in Buford we've been complaining about, where only 15% goes towards the student. Why is 85% going to administrative course? If you reverse those numbers and have only 15% administrative course, you've got 85% now going to students, and we wouldn't be one of the worst states in the union for education. It's
mm-hmm.
common sense, isn't it?
Well, here in D.C., we have some of the highest per student spending, and we have the lowest test scores, I think, or at least close to that. So, I mean, I don't think that money equals success. Money does not equal the result, the best results. You've got problems where, when I went to school, when I was in grade school 30 years ago, we had a principal, we had an assistant principal, we had two secretaries and a nurse. That was the entire administration for a school that employed many, many teachers and hundreds of kids. Nowadays, there's teachers' assistants, administrators, counselors. The school nurse is in there somewhere, I'm sure, and she's probably got a staff. But, it's become very bloated, and that's something that, again, comes down to politics, where you're either for or against the teachers.
Yeah, it is. And then they make it sound like, you're not going to vote for the school budget, so you really don't care about kids.
Mm-hmm.
No, I care about the kids. I just want a responsible school board in there that's going to make sure the kids are educated. I don't want to be forking over my hard tax dollars just for you to turn around and give me a high school dropout as the graduate.
And a lot of the politicians that are deciding this have their kids in private schools.
Isn't that ironic? absolutely ironic. Now, the other thing that caught my eye today, just to show people that I'm not just watching Fox or going to the Weekly Standard. These are both articles out of CNN. Believe it or not, Jack Cafferty out of CNN. America, right now, senior citizens, when they pass away, have less than $10,000 in assets. This is what Social Security has done to us. We are so now, we say, all right, fine, we've got money going to Social Security, so we don't have to put aside for 401ks or IRAs or whatever. We don't have to save our money or pensions to live off of in our senior sunset years. So now they're finding themselves with less than $10,000 in assets. They get sick. Catastrophic medical care. Medicaid and Medicare is not going to cover all of this. Now they have nothing to give their kids. So these kids today coming through are not going to have any inheritance.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What is it to make our next generation better when you've sucked everything out of us now? And with Obamacare coming into effect now, you think you get a few dollars in your pocket now? Forget about it. That's going to be gone.
I'm in my mid-40s. I know a lot of people, my peers, that I worry about because I don't see them saving anything for the future. They're thinking like the people you're talking about. I don't need to save. I'll have Social Security waiting for me. Well, when I went to go see a financial planner 10 years ago, they said, look, don't expect – I mean, this is a financial planner saying don't expect Social Security to be there for you. Don't expect you're going to get anything out of it. And even people now of retirement age, the baby boomers who are retiring, aren't going to get everything they put into the program out of it. They're going to get like an average of $20,000 less than they put in. When I retire in 20 years, if I'm allowed to retire in 20 years, I'm going to get even less than that, I'm sure, and I'm going to be – I'm planning to rely on my own investments today, what I can squirrel away today, what I can invest today, and I'm hoping that it's not going to be taken away from me to pay for my peers who are not trying to be as not being as frugal as me.
And this is where we got the problem coming in with spread the wealth. Now, you're doing everything to secure yourself for your future. But now you've got the spread the wealth and the class warfare, and they're going to try to take that away from you. How are you going to protect yourself?
I don't want President Sasha Obama telling me that I didn't do that. I didn't save that money on my own and taking it, give it to my friends that are buying SUVs and granite countertops right now. Well, I'm going with the Formica that came with the house when I bought it.
Yeah, and that's a whole other problem when you talk about house values and everything else. Hopefully November, this will turn everything absolutely around. Man, oh, man, oh, man. So what's your next step with this voter ID?
Well, I mean, we are going to continue to try and educate people about it. We have a paper that I did not write and don't know the details of about South Carolina that we have coming out. We have one about Texas. We are actually one thing that we did do was we tried to meet the NAACP, head them off at the pass. They wanted to try and make it a UN issue. We had our own meeting with the United Nations where Project 21 members went and said, look, here's the deal about voter ID, and please don't pay attention to those people that met you in Geneva. But we're just going to continue to bring the common sense message about what's going on. We do expect that Pennsylvania is going to have their decision next week. Texas could be any day right around that as well. South Carolina is going to still have their litigation. So it's a very fluid process. And certainly I would love to see groups like the NAACP that have a huge budget to do so to get out there and start helping people get IDs, start being part of the solution and not just complaining about the perceived problem.
That's the truth. And I know South Carolina's case is not going to be settled in time for us to enact any initiative when it comes around November 6th. There's not enough time to do it. That's the truth.
Mm-hmm. It was funny. One of my coworkers was having an interview much like this the other day, but it was a debate against someone who didn't think that voter ID was necessary. And after the show was over and the other guy was thoroughly beaten, he just made one last comment saying, okay, fine, you can have voter ID. Just do it after this election. And that spoke, I think that spoke volumes. I'm glad I remembered it to bring this up today, because I think there's a lot of people that just, they know what happens when you don't have voter ID. They realize, as I mentioned before, the chaos. They realize the opportunity that they have to have mayhem and fraud and potentially throw elections, because there are so many elections that are close. And you don't need widespread. You don't need thousands and millions of fraudulent ballots. You need a couple here and a couple there just to throw precincts over and to get the delegate count over. That they would love to just do it until the next time. Let's have our guy win this time, and then next time you can have it. I mean, that's the kind of logic it sounded like this guy was meaning at that time in this interview last week. And it just kind of points to the whole idea that there is a problem, and this white project, by having a voter ID, it's a very simple, common-sense solution.
Amen, David. That's just so perfectly put. And, you know, another key to your the method to some people's madness and precincts that want to change it, they're not going to have a precinct win by 100,000 million votes. It's going to be quite a bit to get them over, a decent amount. And then the next one the same way, whereas when the total is counted, it all adds up. To whereas it's almost insignificant if you're looking at two numbers side by side.
Yeah, I mean, the last election, the 2008 election, was an electoral landslide for Barack Obama over John McCain. But the vote itself, the numbers, weren't, I mean, I think it was like 6 million apart. Not that much, but won the key states. And so you win the key things, and you don't make it a big deal, then you go. But even in this last election, in June in Wisconsin, you had same-day voter registration and voting there when they had the recall election for Scott Walker. You had some, I think it was the city of Milwaukee or the city of Madison, had 120,000 or 120% voter turnout. And that's making us scratch our heads here because, I mean, we do understand same-day voter registration, you can have over 100%. But that means everybody who was registered before plus everybody who registered that day came out to 120%. That sounds like there probably was a lot of fraud that day. But when you've got a lot of people jamming the polling places, you can't really do the due diligence that you need to do and you should do with something as important as voting.
Well, that's a fact. That is absolutely a fact. Man, this has absolutely gone. You said 10 or 20 minutes you give me, David?
Yeah. Wait a minute. I was supposed to be gone a long time ago.
Good for you. You know, it's so great to see grassroots people step up. Good for you. I mean, it is just, you get so tired, quote unquote, people bitching all the time. Well, you know what? David and his group is stepping to the plate. You know, if anything, we should at least clap while you're walking to the plate. It's good for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm telling everyone to go to his website. It's nationalcenter.org. I had put links up in the chat room earlier. I will put up another one right now. So
great.
Just remember to check out his website, which is center.org.
And you can sign up. You can get our mailing sent to you by email. In the top left corner, you can see a tab for Project 21, so you can go see the stuff specific to Project 21, and there's a ton of stuff on there.
Yes. Matter of fact, we're hoping to have one of your friends on. I've been playing telephone and email tag with him, Mr. Innes.
So if you
happen to run across him, tell me, call me.
Okay. I know he's out in Vegas as well. So, definitely.
Yeah. And I would like to have you back anytime you'd like to come back on. You have a new project coming on. Give me a call and we'll bring you back on.
Great. We'll do that.
I'm going to be letting everybody on my Facebook and Twitter, and I'm a big networker. I'm absolutely going to be sharing your link with everybody and anyone, including those in the caskets that voted for Mayor Daley.
Okay.
All right, David, and I'll send you the link for the show so you can embed it in your website, too.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much.
There you go, a doer. Ladies and gentlemen, David Almasi, a doer. Not just somebody, an armchair quarterback. Amen. How awesome is that? I mean, we certainly could have used him in this last race this week here where I'm at. Wow.
Okay. It is. It was a fantastic interview. And you know what, Mike, I've been batting 1,000 so far. Every single guest that says I'll give you 10 or 20 minutes, it never lasts that long.
Well, well, of course, Annie, you are a charmer. I just, if I can take a minute, I had a couple private messages regarding this week, what had happened, as everyone knows. Bing, for my guy, the guy who was on the ballot who fraudulently fixed the election, got 1,900 and something votes. Bing actually got 2,580 write-in votes for the primary. They went in and they wrote his name down. They filled in the circle. So when it was said and done, Bing won basically by about 56%. Then, of course, there's a however. This individual made it so no matter who ran, the absentee ballots would count. He received 1,100 absentee ballots, therefore, that sent us packing on election night. And we led all the way through. They counted the absentee ballots last. So with that said and done, thank you, everyone. It was a great run. For 2.5 weeks of a campaign against a standing state representative. Imagine that. He switches parties. He set up a fake guy to run against him. That all gets busted. Yet still, 1,900 Republicans went into the polls and punched this guy's ballot, or punched this guy's name. Boy.
Wow. Wow.
There's some dumb voters out there. But thank you, everyone. I mean, it's said and done. Time to move on. You know, you won some big ones. You lose some big ones. That's life. And you move on from there.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to thank Jesse Weeks that called in for Unite the Vote, and also our friend Thomas. Thomas has his own show, The Invisible Conservative. I want to thank everyone that's up in the guest room. We got a lot of good friends here. We got B Long and Cal Booster and Ghost Fighter, and I get rebroadcast on Ghost Fighter tonight. It would be 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I believe that's 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We got ourselves Goose. I can never pronounce this guy's name. Gus, I call him. Got Maverick. We got our friend Mike that's been up in the chat room like crazy. And Reactionary, I think he's got a show on tonight. So Reactionary, I know you're painting your railings there, but what is his show? Red, White, and Blue?
Yes.
All right, Reactionary has a show on tonight, Red, White, and Blue. And we got Tesla. Socialism is not an option. His show is on 7 p.m. tonight, Eastern Time. We've got our friend TMV. And who else? Oh, your friend, White Punk on Dope.
Yes, and of course, instrumental, incidentally, in challenging votes. I have to say, just in that, you know, there's methods to madness in people who speak maybe not such plain English. But I mean, let me tell you, there was this guy who actually won. He didn't win till 4 in the morning, and it's because when you get just people you don't even know who come forward to volunteer for stuff, it is amazing. And also, Jermaine Thompson is in our chat room. Jermaine, who is recovering from cancer surgery. Always good to see you and glad everybody joined us.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jermaine. I did not see you there. I apologize. Hello, Jermaine.
He bounced in. Jermaine's sometimes a little sneaky. Sometimes he's invisible, but he bounced in just as you got the Ghost Fighter. So he came up right behind him.
Ah, sneaky.
And Annie, I think we got something important to mention about Tuesday and Friday's show for next week.
Yeah, we got
excited.
Yeah, we got two guests on Tuesday. We got Cameron Tilbury. He is a promoter and publicist, mostly for music groups, but he's a conservative. He's out in Nashville area. He'll be calling in. Plus, running for Senate, I believe, out of Arizona?
He's running for Congress.
Oh, Congress,
yeah,
out of Arizona.
The People's House, yes, in the state of
Mike,
Arizona.
Mike Adams. So we'll have two fantastic guests on Tuesday.
Yes.
And on Friday,
Kirk
we're going to have, yep, I'm sorry, Kirk Adams. I wrote in the calendar, Mike, I'm sorry.
No problem. But he is, not only is he running, he is an extremely viable candidate. He has raised, if you go and look, he has raised, I believe, somewhere between $250,000 and $500,000 for this campaign.
Now, I do believe DeMint is one of the ones that's backing him also, Senator DeMint. Now, next Friday, we've got our South Carolina GOP chair, Chad Conley, one of Mike's favorite people.
Yeah, ding, 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 my guy.
Yeah, so we got exciting week coming up. So let's keep on rocking here, Mike, you know? We've
amen,
been,
what
is this,
amen 15, to that.
15 out of the last 13 weeks we've been featured on BTR?
Yeah, we're Rock. And, you know, just a comment to follow up to David's. Well, you know what, Annie? There's always a statement, get out the vote. Dead or alive, that's what they're up to. They're getting you out the vote. That's so true. But, I mean, here locally, here's a perfect example of your one vote does count. And, I mean, you can do things grassroots. And it's not lost. It seems lost, and it seems, but it's not. And we have to continue to fight. I mean, because here now, locally, the question lies with the local Republican Party. Are you basically saying that the absentees and military people, you know, I looking back on it, I should have immediately filed suit to halt those votes. Not to not have them not count, but they should have been returned to the people with the information on that there was election fraud and if they wanted to change their vote. What upsets me the most is the military votes, is that here they didn't even get them in time. They're being counted like now. How is it our military people are fighting for us? There's not one or two designated people that are making sure all these votes are in and in on time. That's
yeah, well, they
horrible.
tried to toss out the military vote when Bush was running against Kerry. When Obama was running now against McCain, they tried it again. And they were successful in getting a lot of them tossed out. Now you got the challenge in Ohio going on right now. So we got to wait and see what happens with that challenge. And that is despicable. It's absolutely despicable. But
it certainly is. And I really, if hindsight's 2020, but I'll tell you, if I had to do it again with a couple more, you always say if you're to know what you know now, it would be dangerous. I would basically just the people who write absentee ballots. Well, they could. Some people can go to the polls and void their absentee ballot, but a lot of these people, especially our military, they're not around. Some of these elderly people who vote by absentee ballot, they don't drive. They don't even walk. They're in wheelchairs, and people need to help them with stuff. It is really unfair to them. And bottom line is, it's really a sad situation. But you know what? Looking at the big picture, we can make a difference. And today, you know, well, maybe not today, but maybe tomorrow and the day after, groups like David's groups and awesome shows like Southern Sense, you know, Tesla's show and Doc Jones, all of us, Thomas, everyone, Reactionary, we make a difference. And hopefully we will be back either next week or week after with GGT's show. We all made a decision not to do the show without Jermaine. So we were going to do it, but isn't that great? We all decided if Jermaine's not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And I'll tell you something, ever since we stopped doing it, my love life has increased a whole lot more.
TMI. Oh. With that note, we'll say goodnight, everyone, and we'll see you back here on Tuesday. So have a healthy, happy, and safe weekend. Good night, and God bless.
Yep. Good afternoon, everybody.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.